All right, folks, time now for one of our favorites, Sirius XM radio host, mornings on Bleacher Report channel, and, of course, Monday on NBA Radio. Rick Bucher's been an NBA insider for a long, long time, and if it's going on in the league, there's a good chance that Rick okayed it or knows about it. Thanks so much for joining us here on The Morning Drive with TK here on ESPN 960.
My pleasure. A lot
oh, yeah.
Going on. We thought that the playoffs in general have kind of swung in severely in both directions. At times they've been highly entertaining and highly competitive, and other times we've seen blowouts, I think, to a degree that has been surprising. And now we have the combination of blowouts and still very interesting things going on. So the entertainment level, one way or another, has been very high.
Absolutely. I guess I know you're surprised. I'm surprised. Do you think that the Warriors are surprised? Not that they've lost two out of three, but that they've been manhandled in parts of two games anyway.
Yeah, I don't. That's the thing, is are they surprised that it has gone the way that it's gone? I'm sure it has to be a shock to the system that they're having done to them.
Right.
What they normally do to other people. But when you break it down and you look at the way that they've played, I think the two are connected in that they I just had a conversation about this. When you say God love them, but, or with all due respect, you're about to say something that does not show love or that does not show respect. And Oklahoma City is playing better than it has all season long. But yep. When I look at what they have done to take a 2-1 series lead, including game three, to me it is as much what the Warriors are not doing or what the Warriors are doing that is dramatically out of character that we haven't seen all season long, as opposed to what the Thunder are doing to them. Now, the two aren't completely separate.
Let me just interrupt because you make a great point, but I'd say that the same thing happened to the Spurs, dismantled in ways we haven't seen in a long time, and both culprits are OKC. So I agree with you. I'm not sure I believe it, but I'm seeing it.
But here's the distinction in that the Oklahoma City Thunder did it to a San Antonio Spurs team that was relying on Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge to carry the weight of that team. And while we saw them do that during the regular season, we'd never seen them do that in the playoffs.
Good
in
point.
Fact, we've never seen LaMarcus Aldridge ever do that anywhere, Portland or any place else, and certainly hadn't seen him do it in San Antonio, have not seen him do it in a second round series. Kawhi Leonard, NBA Finals MVP, but that was 2 years ago when you were playing with a different Tony Parker and a different Manu Ginobili and a different Tim Duncan. So, again, just last year we saw the Warriors figure things out and respond, and then through the course of this year we saw them play in ways. The Draymond Green that I saw overall in Game 3 was a Draymond Green that I've seen him struggle at times offensively, but I've never seen him hesitant offensively, and I've never seen him this effective defensively. I can't remember the last time I saw him that ineffective, and that's why I looked at it and I said, "Well, what you saw in Game 3 is why Draymond Green was on my MVP ballot because a case can be made that he is more indispensable to that team than Steph Curry. It's just a matter of how you define it.
Right.
And with him not being a defensive factor, I connect that directly to the fact that they got run the way they did.
So the word comes down, no suspension. Is there a chance if he kicks KD or Westbrook, maybe he's suspended, but since it's the rugby guy, no big deal?
Yeah, I don't know that it's the guy that he kicked as much as what transpired directly beforehand, which is the fact that he was fouled, and he was off balance.
Okay.
And as he suggested, you know, guys now sell calls. And was he selling the call there? Yeah, because he doesn't just kick his leg. He flings his arm, which throws him off balance. And they're looking at that. And look, anytime you look at something in slow motion, it's going to look incredibly worse.
Exactly.
I have to be honest, the times that I saw it in real time, it didn't look that egregious. It almost didn't look like a flagrant foul because it, I mean, everything had to do with where he happened to get kicked as opposed to the leg going up. So clearly the league looked at it and decided, yeah, you know what? We've called it. The precedent is anytime anybody gets hit in that area, it's a one-game suspension. But how many times in that situation, like the Dante Jones? Dante Jones wasn't being fouled in that situation when he ended up hitting Biyombo in the in the groin. This was a case where Draymond Green was fouled and trying to clear himself of the foul, and that caused him to react physically the way that he did.
Rick Bucher's with us. He's, of course, Bleacher Report Channel and Monday's NBA radio show host.
I stumbled on the Biyombo because I kept thinking Mutombo because of the finger wag, and I was just like, it's not Mutombo. It's not Mutombo. Who the hell is it?
Well, the guys played like Mutombo out of nowhere and certainly giving the Raptors a better shot at this. But as we proceed, I got to ask, I mean, I never thought I'd be asking this, but does Game 4 become must-win for the defending world champs?
Boy, it's hard for me to say that it's a must-win.
I mean, they could win three in a row, but if they lose three of the first four, then you wonder if they could win three out of four. Three in a row, I mean.
Yeah. Yes, I do believe, and Jamal Crawford put it out there, and I am inclined to believe that whoever wins Game 4 is going to win the series. Now, are the Warriors capable of winning three in a row against Oklahoma City? Absolutely,
right. Absolutely
they are, even with, and especially with two of those games at home. So, is it a must? I'm not going to go so far as it is a must win. But my only hesitation here is the Warriors have been, like Draymond Green and the way he played, that's out of character. Andre Iguodala didn't look anything close to the finals MVP. Harrison Barnes, they've done a number of things over the course of this playoff run that have been out of character, but I could say, you know what, surprisingly enough, they're overconfident, and they've responded to it. The Game 3 performance by Draymond Green and Andre Iguodala in a situation where I would have expected them to impose their will, the way they lost was baffling to me because it wasn't what OKC did to them. It was what they did to themselves, and I'm having a hard time explaining why they would play the way they did in a Game 3.
Yeah, that's huge. I got to ask you what the most interesting or the maybe the best thing you've seen in rookie coach Billy Donovan has been. I mean, he's a guy, rookie coaches don't get a lot of run, don't get a lot of love. He took down Popovich. Yep. Now, obviously, those are roster deals, but he's been remarkable. He's let the players be the stars, but he's made deft moves behind the scenes, and I think he's been as equal to a task as any rookie head coach I've seen in a long time.
I think what the most extraordinary thing that he has done is you have Kevin Durant, who it's no secret, and people have known it from the beginning of the year, is a presumptive free agent and could be going anywhere.
Yeah.
And this is the time that Billy Donovan said, we're going to feature Russ Westbrook. It's not going to be Kevin Durant and Russell is taking a back seat. Their offense and a lot of what they run has shifted the emphasis toward Westbrook. And that is for a rookie coach to take that stand with all that is on the line for the franchise. That takes an awful lot of cojones to do that. And it has been, I think, successful, and it's the way that they've always should have been playing. But to do it, and to do it with the risk that Kevin may think, okay, I'm going to go elsewhere, because if it doesn't work,
he's gone.
then he's gone, and you haven't succeeded.
Right.
If you win, he still might go.
Sure.
Because he's like, I don't want to be the second banana.
Right.
So the fact that he's taking this and simply looking at what do I think is the best way that we need to play to win, and that's all he's thinking about, that's the way it should be. But I can tell you more oftentimes than not, when it comes to dealing with superstars and retaining your talent, it's not.
Right. A little bit of a, well, a big head scratcher, a lot of surprise when former Jazz legend Jeff Hornacek, recently in Phoenix, who kicked to the curb in Phoenix, gets the Knicks job. How does that run with Rick Bucher?
I like the choice. I like Jeff as a coach. I think he has a way of appealing to guys. If they don't know what his history as a player is, when he talks to you, you immediately know that he understands.
Right.
He's a player's coach who happened to play in a very disciplined system in Utah, and so I think he strikes that balance. He also demonstrated in Phoenix that he knows how to coach an up-tempo style of play. So he's capable of coaching whatever style you want. And I believe that the problems that they ran into in Phoenix had more to do with how the front office handled their personnel, how the ownership handled their personnel, than anything that Jeff did in coaching that team. Now, the one question I have, and I'm sure other, and I believe other people have raised it, is, you know, Jeff played the majority of his career in Utah. He coached in Phoenix. Those are both small markets. There's nothing like New York. And the expectations of the Knicks, from what I know about Jeff, Jeff doesn't tolerate fools or antagonistic questions very, very well. Well, that's all you get in New York for the better part of the job. So how he's going to handle that and how that plays, that is my question, considering the expectations. But when you're just talking about hiring a coach, he's a guy that I would fully endorse.
He also seems to me, you know, he played with two Hall of Famers, and it's not always easy to subjugate your talents. And I mean, most guys who are smart get it, and they go to the better players. But he fit in perfectly. And for a guy like Melo to see that this guy knows how to work with other superstars and get role players and work that in. Plus, I do think his personality, he is so laid back. I wondered if he would work as a head coach because he is so laid back. And that lack of confrontation, I think, will work in New York during the tough times. I agree with you that he has no patience for stupidity, but he's smart enough to maybe not look you in the eye and tell you.
No, you won't say it outright, but you'll get the feel for it. Mm-hmm. And he'll make it clear that how he feels, and I think that does play with players. And I think you're right in that he will. As far as the players are concerned, I think they'll recognize that. He has the kind of pedigree that I think is what makes, and I hate to generalize, but you look at the success that a Steve Kerr has had, guys that have had to make the most out of what they are to be successful and end up being part of winning equations. It's why I would expect that Luke Walton has a chance, maybe not in L.A., but has a chance to be a great coach. Guys that are role players but learn how to be role players in championship or winning situations, those are the guys that I think understand the game from a multitude of angles and levels. And that's what Jeff has experienced. While he did not win a championship, he certainly was on those great teams. Was he a great athlete? No, but he made the most out of what he had and was, and I believe those are the guys who make for good coaches, because you can teach those fundamentals. When somebody is just individually great, like a Magic Johnson, it they just do things that can't be taught. They can't be coached. They defy the system in a lot of ways.
Right.
It makes it difficult to run an effective system with lesser players if you don't know how you get there.
Yeah, and as you spoke, I mean, Hornacek's basketball IQ will translate into coaching for sure. A couple last quick thoughts. The Jazz, we're always trying to, you know, they're reinventing constantly, and there's a little bit more pressure with every, you know, year that goes by, and now they have, you know, it's another summer with trying to fill out the roster and get better and all those kinds of things, waiting for Dante Exum to come back. How far can he come back, and will he be the guy? But in the West, the Kings hire Jaeger. the Lakers are going to be better without Kobe, whether Walton's the guy or not, they're going to be better. And then the T-Wolves hire Tibbs, and that's a loaded roster. So look out, Jazz. And Portland, by the way, is pretty good. Look out, Jazz, because there's trouble below you, too.
Yeah, the question is, because I think in Portland, what was demonstrated is that you had Damian Lillard. You have that franchise player,
right,
that can make other guys better and can be your go-to guy. In Minnesota, I'm not quite as high as everybody else is, but Karl Anthony Towns has the chance to be that same type of guy who can take you to the next level. Here's the question facing the Utah Jazz. Is who is going to be that player that takes you to the next level? And I believe most would say probably Gordon Hayward is first on the list. Fair? As far as...
Absolutely.
I don't be that guy?
I think that's a fair question. I'm not sure he is that guy by his own admission. He doesn't necessarily love the ball late in the game.
Right.
And he's a team guy to a fault. He's that Butler... serviceable,
right,
superstar. He's a max money guy without necessarily the portfolio, but they're going to need a bunch,
right,
of pieces, and maybe Rodney Hood is part of that. They're going to need, because they're not going to get a major superstar to come here, I don't think.
Right. So who is, that's the question.
Great question.
Who is that guy? And I only posed it as Gordon because I think that for Jazz fans, that's the first guy you look to be that guy.
Yep.
And if you think he's not, then who is? And I don't know that guy is on the roster right now. So look, are you going to get a free agent superstar? I don't think you necessarily have to. I think you can draft that guy. Look at,
yep,
Minnesota with Karl Anthony Towns, or the Trailblazers with Damian Lillard.
Yep.
I don't think you have to acquire them, but you have to get one. And if they don't have one yet, then you can have all of the ancillary talent that you want. It's not going to be enough to get you there. And I would point back to the Minnesota Timberwolves with Kevin Love. To me, they've had enough talent to be or should have been a playoff team overall. But they didn't have that one guy that leads you there,
right,
that wins the games, the kind of games that Utah lost down the stretch in the regular season that saw them on the outside looking in. That is the piece that they need. Until they get it, we can talk all we want about the potential and,
yep,
the young talent. They're not going to get to that postseason. And then once you get to the postseason, then you find out whether that guy can take you to the next,
right,
step. That's
right,
what was really the loss in not making the playoffs this year, is that discovery of what you really have. There's still a lot to be figured out in terms of just how good this young talent is.
Once again, a tour de force of great insight. SiriusXM radio host, certainly mornings on Bleacher Report Channel, Mondays NBA Radio. Rick Bucher, NBA Insider for a long time, and I know this is the perfect time for you. Enjoy the games. Look forward to checking in with you soon. Continued success, and thank you so much for joining us here on the Morning Drive.
Anytime.